This is a song for my friends Jared and Gary. They started a podcast and said a theme was necessary. They're just a couple of guys in a band that you know. Some rock star dads who started a show. So here's the next episode.
Welcome to the Rockstar Dad Show right here on Adobe Radio or wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And before we do anything, this will be a few days later, but we do need to say some words about Eddie Van Halen passing away yesterday. Very sad, long battle with cancer. My wife, you know, said to me, she goes, I didn't even know that he was having, Oh, wait. Hi, Gary.
Hey. I'm sorry, buddy.
In. I just got on a roll. It's just been weighing heavy on me. And it's not, again, I know people die, and he was 65, and he's had this for a long time. In fact, he's had, like, pieces of his tongue removed. And
yeah, he's had some issues.
He's a chain smoker. And, you know, but we lose a lot of people. We've lost a lot of people this year, but it's just, you don't lose people like that very often.
Yeah, I mean, the guitar players and musicians that everyone looks up to looked up to him.
Yeah, it's somebody said it. I think it was El Jefe. No, I can't remember who it was. Somebody like that. Somebody in punk rock was like, you know, you pretty much got everybody I know that plays guitar playing guitar, and it's not far off, you know. I mean, yeah. You know, I remember, you know, I knew who Van Halen was. I liked that stuff, but you know, I liked the guitar solo and Beat It before I really even liked Van Halen, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, they were just the best of the best, you know. Like, everyone else is like, I don't know, do you like do you like Motley Crue, or do you like Guns N' Roses, or do you like, you know, do you like Poison, or do you like this? Or everyone else was just like, it doesn't matter. There's no, do you like this, or do you
like
that?
You're right. You're right. That is so right that they kind of aren't in those categories. Like, you can't, you don't, you're right. There's no, like, I like Rat better than I like Poison, and I like Warrant better than I like this, and, you know, because they cross.
You don't even need to have the conversation. It's just the statement. Van Halen. Yeah. Conversation over.
So I'll give you my stance on the great singer thing, and then we're actually gonna, we have a different kind of episode today. We have Clinton Sparks here, who is a DJ, author, producer, entrepreneur, rock star, freaking dad.
Yep.
And we had him for 20 minutes, and we talked for almost an hour. So we're gonna just give him this episode. He is amazing. New book out called How to Win Big in the Music Industry.
Awesome insight, awesome father, great conversation, and I think he deserves the whole episode.
I agree. So I do have to settle this once and for all. Hagar or David Lee Roth? They're two different bands, Gary. There's no debate. It's like one was a band, and then David Lee Roth left. They got Sammy. To me, they covered some Van Halen songs, they covered some Sammy Hagar songs, and then they were just a different band. There's no reason for me to have to compare the two things.
I 100% agree with you, but I think it also, like, goes back to the point I was making. Everyone else is Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue, this or that. Well, it's Van Halen or Van Halen.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Now, you know, Sean 316, who produces this show, his favorite Van Halen album is the Gary Cherone album. Now, that's ridiculous. And you know, maybe it's just his age. Maybe it just, I don't know this to be true, but maybe it just happened that way or whatever. But that's not a thing. You know, I just don't know how it's possible for a band that big to have three different singers. Like, two is a lot, you know? I mean, AC/DC did it, you know. I mean, Genesis, you know, there's a few bands that get away with two at that level, but yeah. Three, I don't know that that's even attempted by many, but the Gary Cherone years are not even in the conversation, and you could just do that on a technicality based upon success. It didn't work. My opinion aside,
It's a trivia question, and that's about it.
That is 100% accurate. Yes. And it could be a Bowling for Soup trivia question. Who's the other guy that's singing in Van Halen? Which one did we mean? Huh? Yeah. Anyway, rest in peace, Eddie. I am certain that you were up there with Dimebag, and you guys are doing all the shredding, and just not really many like that we get on this planet. So I just wanted to pay a little bit of tribute to him and tip one for our homie, although he, you know, we didn't know him or anything. I mean, he technically not our homie.
But I think we would have hit it off had we.
We would have gotten along great, I think. Yeah.
Would have been
better. Rest in peace, Eddie. And we will be right back with Clinton Sparks. You guys are going to want to check this out. This is going to be a great episode. Thanks for tuning in to Rockstar Dad Show. Okay, guys, let's face it. My hair is awesome. It is my identity. It has a whole fan club of its own. It's amazing. However, many of my friends aren't so lucky. They get to their 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of losing their hair, and everybody goes into a panic. Let's face it, you know, no guy ever wants to go bald. That's why I am telling all of my friends about Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. 2 out of 3 dudes will experience some sort of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. But thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. They make it easy and deliver your medication every 3 months. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products. You may have tried them before, but probably never for this price. You can see results in 4 to 6 months, so the sooner you start with Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to Keeps.com/rockstar to receive your first month of treatment free. That's KEEPS.com/rockstar. Hey, welcome back to the Rockstar Dad Show. We are here with Clinton Sparks, who it's impossible to introduce you.
Why is that?
Because you have too much. There's too much. Like, I think I have a lot going on. Your freaking just journey through this world is insane. Just with how much stuff you have done.
I will say you have a lot going on in the background.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I should explain this. We're under COVID quarantine. We don't have it. We tested negative, but we're doing the 14 days where we can't be around other people.
Yeah.
And so the second day of that quarantine was supposed to be my kid's birthday party. And so it was canceled, and so the balloons came up in the studio for just a little added extra ambiance.
Yes, it feels celebratory in here right now. I love it.
It feels nice, right? So, yeah. Well, dude, it's so good to meet you, and thank you for doing this. That's Gary up there. I'm Jarrett.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Jarrett.
Hello.
Nice to meet you, man. Thanks for coming on.
I think it's safe to assume you guys are both dads.
Yes, we are. Yeah, that's the, so basically in a nutshell, we started this show in a swimming pool drinking beers, and we realized, 'cause we're in a band together, we realized pretty much all we talk about is being dads when we're not being in a band, and we were like, this is an untapped market. People love talking about their kids.
So
why don't you tell us a little bit about your dad resume?
Wow, that's a great way to put it. I never thought about my resume as a dad. Matter of fact, when a woman is going to have a kid with a man,
yeah,
you get a dad resume to make sure you've got a deadbeat.
We're working on it. We're working on that. Dad resume. We're trademarking that. You want in?
That's funny. You guys should create that and give that, make that available for women. Like, before you have a baby with this guy, make him fill this out.
Yeah. But basically what our dad resume on the show is, introduce us to your family, your kids.
Sure. I have a 16-year-old boy named Jack, who's my best friend, has been since he was born. And I have a 18-month-old daughter named Sophie, who I was a minute late for this podcast because today was our first day at school.
Ah.
So we took off at school, which sucked ass. However, she was a pro. She was like, "What's up, guys?" Walks in there, kicks a soccer ball, gives me a kiss goodbye, and I'm like, This is amazing.
That's the best way it can go. Gary has a young daughter as well. Right. And it did not go like that.
Well, neither of my kids liked being dropped off at daycare whenever they were little. My son, I mean, he had probably 2 years of every day dropping him off, just crying, not wanting to go. And it sucked. That's heartbreaking. Yeah. My daughter, like the first day we took her, she just walked in and it was great. Hey, new toys, new stuff. And then the second day she was like, oh, wait, y'all are doing this again? And then I was she got over it. And she loves it now. So
I was talking to my wife on the ride back and I said, because we were just excited. I go, I wonder, like, does that have to do with parenting? Or are people born a certain way, right? And they're just more social and just so. And then she's like, no, it's the parenting. Obviously, she's going to say that, right? But then, so then I said, well, I think the reason why she adapted so well is because we socialize her. We have her around our friends. We bring her to my gym. You know, we have a nanny. So she's introduced to different people. So I think, like, even me, when I was young, I was so attached to my mom that when she left me somewhere else, I felt unsafe.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of times that the kids, just because all they know is their parents, and when their parents aren't there is their, like, safety net, that's why they lose it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's a very good, and because I think that's the same. So my kids are definitely very social. And my young son, literally, I don't think he's cried once ever being dropped off at a place. And in fact, it hurts my wife's feelings so much because he's so easygoing. Because he just always like, oh, this is what I'm doing now. That's cool. All right. Well, we'll see you when you get back. And then when we get back, they're like, yeah, could I get another hour? You know,
He doesn't even miss me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's the same when we come back from, you know, he loves to stay with his grandma when she goes on tour with me. And so what he does miss us, but it's not as much as Casey would like it when she travels with me.
Right.
So Jack is 16. By the way, I have a 14-year-old named Jack. Great name. And but Jack is born pretty early in your career. I mean, you kind of just coming out of the DJ world and getting into the whole business side of things. What was life like back then? I mean, and just in connection to that, What was it like back then, and then all of a sudden you've got a kid?
Well, I mean, I was shitting my pants, you know, when I found out that I was going to have a kid, because to me that was like, holy shit, I'm responsible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So prior to that, like, you know, coming up as a teenager and stuff, you know, I was always into music since I was 10 years old, right? And it was something I always did. It was like the thing I was most passionate about and worked on it every day. However, I was a criminal when I was young. So when I was a teenager, I was, you know, a thief. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'd stick people up. I'd rob cars. I'd break into houses and shit like that, right? So I was a pretty shitty dude. Well, I mean, I was an awesome dude, but I was doing shitty things.
Right. I mean, was that just part of where you grew up? That's what you did? You know, that was survival for you?
Yeah, I was born in Boston. My dad left when we were young. He's an alcoholic. My mom worked multiple jobs. I was sexually abused for years by my mom's boyfriend. I was bullied a lot. I didn't have any friends. So I was pretty lonely. Didn't have any guidance. Didn't know what to do with myself. And we were super broke.
Right.
So, you know, originally I was doing it out of survival. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And then, you know, when I was in eighth grade, I got jumped by this kid because I went to a really rough school. In Boston, I think I was one of two white kids in the whole school. And, you know, back then you had to be really sharp. And back then too, like even now, but even when I was younger, like snapping on each other or bagging on each other was like the thing you did. So I had to be really witty and quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had to walk in and know what assess the whole room, what they're wearing, what kind of haircut they have, you know, if their sneakers suck, all that shit early on. So, you know, I would end up being really good at it. And, you know, people that, just like any bully or any tough guy, when they can't outwit you or outsmart you, they're just like, "Oh, fuck you!" And they want to fight, right?
Right.
So because I was super quick, I'd run circles around people with the witticism. And they'd be like, "What do you think, you're smart?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, a little bit." You know? And then they're like, "What are you, a wise ass?" And I was like, "Kind of." You know, like, one of the things I learned throughout life, the more you don't care about something, the more it drives other people crazy, just like your son.
Sure.
That's going, right? So when you treat life like that, people get angry at you that do. So anyways, I got into a fight with a kid there. He pulled a knife out on me, sliced my jacket open. I didn't go to school for the rest of the year, but I'd get up every day and pretend like I was going to school. And I lived on the trains, and I would like eat like saltines and mustard packs for like lunch and stuff. So that's kind of like, then I started getting into, you know, the crime stuff. And I always did it by myself. Like it was never like something I did to show off or brag or like, hey guys, you should come rob houses with me. Right. You know, how they say you do your dirt all by your lonely. Right. So, so that's when I finally started getting my life together and realized like, you know, I'm going to go to jail or die. Right. I think I was like 19 or 20. I seen an ad for UPS. And prior to that, I was always doing hard labor work, too. So even though I was doing that, I was still always like, oh, we're having an earthquake right now.
Holy shit.
I was wondering, like, why my lights were shaking like that. And I just realized, oh, yeah, I live in L.A.
Yeah. Holy shit. Oh,
it's shaking a lot. I don't know if you guys can see it.
No.
Like, you can't see it.
No, you're.
Everything's shaking. My whole desk.
That's why. Really?
Sorry.
Is it still doing it?
How awful would that be if it was like really dramatic? My TV fell off the wall. You guys caught it on your podcast.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, and we'd have the video for it and everything. TMZ for sure.
Yeah. Finally, we're going viral.
Finally.
So I had always worked at moving companies. I was always shoveling snow for money. Warehouses. That's what I always did. So when UPS was hiring, it's funny because at that point I went and I did the test for the IBEW, which is the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I got the highest score on that test. And then I also got called back from UPS on the same day.
Wow.
So I was like, oh man, it's going to take me like 5 years before I even make any money as an electrician. Cause you know, you gotta be a journeyman, you gotta be an apprentice or whatever. And then I can immediately go to UPS and get full benefits and get all that. So I worked at UPS. I love that job because I love hard work. And then after like 4 years of being there, I ended up hurting my spine. I was carrying an 85-pound package up some makeshift steps and the stairs collapsed.
Oh my God.
Yeah, ended up getting spinal surgery. And then there goes the rock star dad action right there.
He is, yeah. His kids come in like during the thing. Oh no, it was a drink delivery. Unbelievable.
So then I ended up getting hurt. I was like, holy shit, I didn't graduate high school. I can't do hard labor anymore. All this music that I've been doing kind of as a hobby, I have to make it a reality. So that's, I had no plan B. I'm like, I just have to make this work.
Right.
So I was so used to just being on my own schedule, working really hard, driving up and down the East Coast, giving out mixtapes, going to work in the studio at all hours of the night. And then when I found out I was pregnant, it was like, oh my God, like I never would imagine it, you know, being a dad.
Sure.
You know, even though like my whole life, all I ever cared about was my two biggest goals since I was a kid was making people happy and one day being an awesome dad. But then when the dad came to reality, it was a scary thing. But
So. I mean, and yeah, so again, and then well, how I've got to know, how does UPS then get into you being a DJ? Was that just because you were making these mixtapes?
I was a bedroom DJ.
Okay, got it.
Way prior to that. When I got hurt, that's when I was like, holy shit, I got to take my hobby when the thing that I do in my bedroom. You know, I was already like somebody locally in Boston. Like, it's like, I was a known rapper. I was winning all the talent shows. I was producing for local artists locally. So I was local. I had some local celebrity. Right. Once I got hurt and I couldn't do any of those things anymore, and I don't even have a college, you know, I mean, a high school diploma, I was like, I have no choice. I have to make what I've been doing all these years as for fun or as a hobby or to make side money. I have to make this my legit career. So I just went at it.
It's no wonder you and Eminem get along so well. You have a very similar story in that, you know, where you come from and where you start to actually find your momentum and people start to appreciate you and sure, both of you that quick-witted and, but you know, and that's really, really interesting that it's so streamlined and that you guys work together still.
Eminem was one of my first big interviews at my mom's basement. when I back in 1999.
Yeah.
When I was like, okay, I got to make this for real. So then I was like, okay, what's my plan? I built a plan and I was like, great. The one thing I do know is that record labels are super far behind and they don't understand technology or what's happening right in front of them. And I realized that because one of my good friends worked at the big radio station. So I'd always hang at the station. I'd overhear phone calls. So when I did that, I was like, man, the internet is new. I know that they don't understand it yet. So I'm going to lie and pretend like I have a super cracking online radio show so that whenever they send big artists to Boston to do the big stations, that they would be doing a disservice to their artists if they didn't come to my mom's basement and be on my show. So I had everybody from Cameron to Common to Eminem to Talib Kweli to Wu-Tang Clan. Like, everybody came to my mom's basement. And I kept doing that. Jada Kiss, 2 Chainz, like everybody would start coming over. And it was the thing, you know what I mean? In Boston to Clinton. So, I mean, I'd have tour buses driving up to the front of my, like, my house in the hood.
Yeah.
And like, man, what the fuck? It'd be like a whole spectacle.
Yeah. So it's, man, I mean, that to me, that is, that just shows, you know, how entrepreneurial you are and where you're headed at that point. And it just, you know, it's similar to our story. We did the same thing. We started a fake record label, a fake booking agent. We, you know, it's a, there's a story. I don't know if you know the story about how Cheap Trick got their record deal.
No.
They actually hired out like this place and made it this huge, huge press spectacle. Nobody even knew who they were. Showed up in a limousine, went in, just did all this. And basically the record labels just were like, fuck, we've got to get these guys, you know, like back then, of course, you're like, you're right. There was no internet. You didn't know that the other guy wasn't interested in that, you know?
Right. Yeah, way different now. I mean, you could fool people a lot more back, especially then. What's that, the 80s?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we were impressed by Ghostbusters and Gremlins back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you live in a world where, you know, these kids are immune to porn because it's just so accessible.
Oh, it's so, yeah.
Like when we were kids where we're like flicking the channel, going back and forth so we can see a boob.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Now there's just, like 14-year-old girls feel like they got to be part of Bukakis.
You're right. Porn
so prevalent in their life, and it's like, oh my god.
Maybe you'd find the porn, and you'd mess with the horizontal hold to see if you could on the TV to see if you could adjust it to get to the same point.
Yeah,
oh, man. So
it's kind of sad, especially you know being a dad.
Yeah,
it's really scary to realize. You know, you can literally watch someone get their head cut off in real life online.
Yeah.
Watch porn all day. You can watch, you know, all these things that were so taboo and so like urban myths when we were younger, that it's like, I don't even know, where do you go from here? What's next? Like,
yeah, you're right.
You wake up, your kid snuck out of the house 10 years from now and they're hanging out in Mars.
Yeah.
Mars. I told you not to go there.
There's no shock value.
Like you were talking about a few minutes ago, whenever you were younger, you were going out of the house and getting in trouble and robbing and doing this. You were doing all like, but now there's plenty of bad stuff that we're just providing our kids on their phone, on their iPad. There's just tons of access to all the crazy stuff. You really have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I honestly think we're in a crisis right now for kids.
Yeah.
And the problem is that, you know, we're the first generation to have kids that were born into that generation. So most people, I'm different because what I do, so I understand it a lot, but most people like in our age, they're not super hip to the internet, so they don't know what to look out for. They don't know how to protect their kids. Wow, this is a really big earthquake going on.
Jesus like, Christ, this going. Is crazy.
Yeah, like my house is, like you can hear it cracking.
Where in LA are you?
I'm 30 minutes north of Hollywood. But anyways, yeah, what was I saying?
Yeah, we crisis for kids.
Yeah, and I think it's a crisis for kids right now. I think, you know, like the 25-year-olds now, when they become parents, they'll be better equipped to teach their kids and protect their kids and, you know, prohibit their kids from doing certain things. If they even come out of the fact, it's man, we can go have a whole day conversation about it.
Right.
I just had a long conversation last night and I talked to a lot of kids that are young that, you know, lead and own businesses online and are big in, you know, social media and marketing. And it's like, I don't even know where to begin. It's so messy. So like these kids are like in this world, this fake world, right? It's just full of lies. The whole internet lies, right? So, and then you have these insane expectations of everybody posting like the life they want, or the life they want you to think that they have, or all the cool things that are going on, that it becomes so real to them that that's their real life. So their real life is never a real life.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then it's like, they don't really have real experiences. They just pretend like they did. They never really had success. They just pretend like they did. They never really went through hardships. They just pretend like they did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it's so fake and unreal and disingenuous that I don't know what's going to happen to the world after that. Is it going to become even smaller? Is it going to become even faker?
Right.
Like, I don't even, like, with, like, regardless what party you're a part of, and I'm not really into politics at all, but like the world, the sanctity of like kind of the hierarchy is just so dismantled now. It's almost like, let's hypothetically say our president became, not the current one, just whatever president, became a serial killer. And we found out. Who stops it? Who says, get out of the office now?
Right.
Who said, like, we've discovered during this administration, like, holy shit, there is nobody enough in charge to, like, make sure make sure everyone's safe. It's just like, no, if somebody wants to say, I'm changing all of the rules.
Yeah.
I'm changing everything. Matter of fact, starting tomorrow, we're a dictatorship. Do something about it.
Yeah. Well,
nobody can do anything about it. You know what I mean? Like, and it's crazy because we have such a system where you have to vote and you get the Congress and you get the House, and like, it's out the window. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't understand. Like, and by the way, I'm not saying it to get political. I'm just saying that if the highest thing in our world is like questionable and all over the place,
right,
and can change the rules whenever they feel like it, like, how do we have any kind of sanity way down here? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't exist. So like, really, it's really a crisis, and I think it's way more serious than, you know, a typical parent that just goes like, you know, oh my God, the kids are always on social media. Well, like, I don't even think they understand how dangerous like the future is for people that have grown up in social media. And it's scary for, you know, even my wife, when we first had our daughter, she's like, no screen time until she's two.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, yeah. We'll see if that lasts. Right. And then like, she's already watching Frozen.
Yeah.
16, 15 months. And it's like, I thought you were going to do screen time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I always say you do your best parenting before you have kids, right? Before you have kids, you're like, we're never going to let them have fries and no screen time and this and that. And then you have kids, you're like, holy shit, we're just trying to survive.
Right, just like you call your best plays when you're not in the game.
Yeah, right.
Right. Okay. Oh, sure. Exactly. Yeah, very good point. Clinton, let's pause for just a second. We got to take a quick break. We will be right back with more Rockstar Dad Show right after these words. Check it out. Welcome back to the Rockstar Dad Show. I would love to keep going, but I do want you to talk to us about your kids. So Jack and you, he's 16. You guys are still best friends, which I love because I tell my son all the time, whether he likes it or not, we're going to be best friends forever. And he agrees with me and has come around to all the sports teams that I like and, you know, all of that. But, you know, that he has had quite a ride with you through your career, you know, I mean, through, you know, again, starting out as an entrepreneur and then working with literally the biggest names in music and starting companies and things like that. So it has to be something where, you know, you have to be proud and, you know, and so what is he interested in is basically where I'm getting into.
Well, he's interested in gaming.
Yep.
He's interested in music. He's interested in fitness now. But yeah, he's been through, you know, a lot. And you know, I'm really proud of him and the guy that he is, because despite if he found out what he wants to be in life, you know, business career-wise, he's really an honorable, trustworthy, respectable dude. Like, even like, I watched him, you know, he had a girlfriend, you know, they broke up, but they were going out for a while. He's not the kind of kid that like wants to mess around with a bunch of girls. Like he's literally a small version of me. Like he loves his girl and that's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, you know, the things that he says at his age, from even when he was 14, I'd be like, oh my God, that's so mature and profound. And it is a testament to how I've raised him. I've been very attentive to him. I've guided him, or like I've mentored him, I guide him, I walk him through things. Even when I went through my divorce with his mom, like there was a me and him thing that we worked on together.
Yeah.
You know, even before it was forward facing with me and his mom, when it got to a point that this was real, me and him would take drives, we'd sit out in the lawn, we'd go for walks, and we would talk about things even before she even really knew I was 100% seriously leaving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, because if he's my best friend, then I got to tell him what's going on and what's on my mind. And as my son, I got to walk him through it and make him understand it. And it's funny because, sorry, I'm going to sneeze. When he was 9 years old, this is, man, it's still shaking. When it was nine years old.
This is crazy.
Yeah, this has got to be the longest earthquake I've ever heard of. So at 9 years old, I had presented in our home to his mother and him. I said, listen, I want to propose that we get a divorce, but we can all still be best friends. I can still live in the house. Everything will be the same because his mother, we were friends. You know, I kissed her on her 13th birthday.
Oh, wow. You know? Yes, so, you guys grew up together.
Yeah, so like I've known her longer than I didn't. So we were friends, and I think the marriage was making us not be like have a good relationship anymore. So I was like, let's just all still be awesome friends because we, us three, were great friends. And I go, I'll live here. And, and my son, literally, as I'm saying this, goes, Dad, hold on, Mom, hold on 1 second. Dad, come with me. He's nine. He walks me outside, says, Dad, sit down for a minute. We walk outside onto our deck, sits down next to me. He goes, Dad, I know Mom's really mean, swears and yells at you all the time, but you have to try harder for the family. Like, you can't leave. You have to try harder. And I'm looking at him thinking, what I wouldn't have given to be able to have a conversation with my dad to convince him not to leave.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, pal, I'll stay for you, man. And then I said, I'll give it my best.
Yeah.
Like, all right, plugged and I stayed. And then it progressively got worse over the next 3 years. But I had vowed that I would live in hell before I would ever leave my son. Now, I know you guys and other people would say, just because you get a divorce doesn't mean you're leaving your son. But in my mind, if you get divorced, you know what the dynamics become. And it is kind of leaving your son. You know what I mean? I want to be in the house with my son. I want to kiss him that night. I want to hug him in the morning.
Yeah.
I want to see him. We're playing games. I want to help him with homework. Like, I don't want to do that part-time. I don't want to do it a couple days a week, right? Hmm. So, so I was willing to live in hell, and I did.
Yeah.
And then 2015, two significant things happened that were just like, you know, the tipping point. And the second one, he jumped up out of bed and was basically like, Mom, leave him alone. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And then he left the room and he sat next to me and he literally looked at me and goes, Dad, I understand why you're going to leave now. So when he said that at 12,
yeah,
like,
wow,
I called a lawyer the next day.
Yeah.
But I thought he wouldn't understand what I'm going through until he was like 15, 16. I thought I was going to have to be in this shit for a while.
Man, I mean, that is crazy. That is, yeah, I mean, good for you. You know, it's because there are the two schools, right? I mean, you admit that your school is, if I'm not there, then I've left him. And then there the other school is, you know, happy parents, happy kids. And if we're not happy together, then, you know, there's that. And I'm in the opposite situation, but I definitely see exactly your point because those are the things that went away, you know, putting him to bed every night. Both of them, because I have an older daughter as well. And, you know, and then they get to,
I don't know if there's a right or wrong. It depends on each individual situation.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So what ended up happening with what kind of custody did you end up getting?
So I ended up getting it up. So me and him started looking for a house. Like, dude, what if I just buy the house across the street? Right. And all my friends like, dude, you can't live on the same street as your ex. But I was like, how cool would it be to run across? So anyways, me and him sorted it out. We talked it out. I said, what would you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? And he was concerned I was going to move and leave to California. And I was like, dude, no. And then so I got an apartment like literally like 2 miles up the street from our house. You know, at that time, I also still traveled a lot, too. So whether I lived at home or I had an apartment, I was still traveling, you know, all over the world, DJing and stuff. So we had our own place. I got a 2-bedroom apartment. So he had his own bedroom. It was awesome. Like, it was one of the best times of our life. It was like roommating with your best friend.
Yeah.
You know, even though he's only 12 at the time. So then he had called me. It's a long story, so I'm going to just condense it. he had called me, you know, it was a year now that I haven't been there. We have a great relationship, but then there'd be times that we'd be having the time of our life, we'd be having fun, we'd be in love. Then he'd go home and he'd talk to me on the phone like 3 days later, like I was an asshole. So, and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like, pal, what's going on? And he's like, I don't know, Dad, man. I just don't feel like talking. I'm like, what the heck? What are you all right? And then, you know, they'd say things like, Dad, you're the one that decided to leave. And then I'd be like, where's this coming from? Why are you talking like this? Right? And like, and I didn't realize this until a year later, but every time he'd be back with her, she'd be poisoning.
Yeah.
And I was never saying anything bad. I was, oh, you know, it's tough for your mom and da da da. Like, you know, this sucks that this is happening, but you know, I'll still be friends with your mom one day. Like I was making it seem like there's light at the end of the rainbow, right? And she, on the other hand, was just bashing me, making me seem like I'm a jerk, like I'm doing wrong things. I'm like messing around, and like none of it was true. But you know, he's a 12-year-old brain, and he's getting stuffed with it every day. He knows no better, right?
Right.
But here's where the power of my son comes in. The day before his 13th birthday, I get a call. I'm in California, so it's like, it was like 2 a.m. his time. And I'm like, what the hell? My son's calling. This, something must be wrong. So I answer. He goes, Dad, can you come get me? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I was scheduled to come get him in 2 days because it was a week vacation at school. And we were about to be together for a whole week. So he's like, yeah, I'll be there in 2 days. He goes, no, can you come right now? And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's 2 a.m. What do you mean? He goes, Dad, I just want you to come right now. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on, pal. But if you want me to come now, I'll come right now. He goes, yeah, just come now. So I get on the first flight, which is like 4 hours later. I get there. I end up back in Boston. He's in school when I land. He's just getting out of school, whatever. It happens to be his birthday. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm here. I don't know what you want me to do. Now, like, I'm just thinking him and his mom are having fights, and he's just, you know. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm here. And he goes, well, come get me. And I go, well, I can't, pal. It's your birthday, and your mom probably has a plan for you for your birthday. Why don't you just go have a good dinner? Call me afterwards, and we'll talk about what's going on. So he does that. He calls me that night. And basically it turned into, again, I'm just making it super short, turns into him trying to figure out how to sneak out of the apartment to come outside. I'm outside of his apartment. I'm like, I'm outside your building. What do you want me to do? What's going on? He's not really telling me anything. He's just like, I'm just trying to sneak out. I'm like, well, just tell your mom. She's like, no, she won't. Then she finds him on the phone, and then it becomes this whole big fight with them. I'm listening to them. I'm coaching him how to talk to her, right, and be respectful. And then he's trying to leave. I end up calling the cops. Not that the cops are going to take him, but at least just come do a well-being check. Yeah. They come. He's telling her, the cops, whatever. The cops ask me, do you think he's safe? I go, yeah, I think he's safe. I don't really know what's going on. It's like, well, he's going to be with you tomorrow anyways. Let's wait till tomorrow. Pick him up the next day. I don't even bring it up. We have an awesome week. We're four-wheeling, doing whatever we're doing. It's the Saturday. I got to bring him back. And I'm like, all right, it's time to go home, pal. And he looks at me. He goes, Dad, I'm not going. I'm never going back there. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, Dad, I'm never going back to mom. And I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? Because you can't bring me back. And I go, all right, well, you got to tell me what the hell's going on, man. Because I'm thinking if we just have a good time the whole week,
sure,
whatever stress he's going on will go away. And him and his mom, he's probably having a tough time with the divorce and his mom, whatever, right? So, no, it turned into this nightmare that I didn't know he was going through. And I called her and I'm like, hey, what's going on? Like, Jack doesn't want to come home. And instead of her talking to me, and I'm trying my best to not make her look like an asshole while we're talking.
Sure.
You know, she's like, you know, bring my fucking son home. And I'm like, just tell me what's going on. Why does he not want to come home? I don't understand. And she's just yelling at me. She gets on, yells at him. We end up hanging up. I call my lawyer. I tell her what's going on. Like, my son doesn't want to go home. What do I do? And hopefully this part maybe will be able to help some men out there that goes through something similar.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do. What do I do? I can't not bring him back, right? So she's like, you can't keep him. That's kidnapping. And I'm like, but I'm not going to bring my son somewhere. My job is to protect my son. And if he feels unsafe and doesn't want to go back, I'm not doing it. And then I was like, the cops are going to have to come get me. I'll just leave. You guys won't find me. She's like, that's kidnapping. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's protecting my son.
Yeah.
And then like, well, the only thing I can do is Monday I can do an emergency custody order with the court, but I need your son. Will your son write a letter? And I say, Jack, would you be down to write a letter about why you don't want to go home? So he was like, yeah, sure. So he goes in the other room while I'm talking to my lawyer, you know, I ended up hanging up with her. I go, you okay in there? He's like, yeah. He ends up coming out an hour later. When I read the letter, it was like, I cried. I fell on my knees and cried.
Holy fuck.
Because the shit that he was going through, that I had no idea, the things that were being said to him, the way he was being treated, the way he felt.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, he's like, you know, the big line in that letter was, you know, my mom makes me think of committing suicide.
Oh, man.
And, like, I'm like, what is going on, man? Like, I knew she was not nice to me, but I thought, well, we have history. I thought she just had some resentment or anger towards me. I really never knew why she hated me so much, right? But I didn't think it would transfer to him. And so then, ever since then, that was his 13th birthday 3.5 years ago. I never brought him back, and I fought tooth and nail and spent $250,000 in court fees. And basically, it ended up like, here, you take the house, you take my savings, you take my wealth management account, you take all this, and I'll keep Jack.
Yeah, it's funny how they, you know, that can happen. You know, money can certainly make their desire to parent decrease.
I wouldn't say it was straight just money hungry.
Right.
I think there was a little. I think it was like she was also didn't know the right thing to do.
Yeah, she was overwhelmed. With parenting,
and she also, you know, after time and time again of then we had to go to like all therapy together, and then like reunification therapy and all these things that Jack is like, I don't want to do these things. Like, I don't need to reunify. Like, I'm okay.
Right.
She, you know, like, he's 13 saying I'm fine. She needs it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it finally turned into her realizing his happiness was greater with me. Mm. And I think she was willing to sacrifice fighting any longer. If his happiness was with me, then I'll just bow out. But you're going to pay me, motherfucker.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I don't think it was like, give me money, I'll give you the son.
Sure.
I'm going to do what I think is best for him, but you're also going to pay for it.
That makes sense. Man, I mean, we're talking to Clinton Sparks, and you are the true definition of a rock star dad. And now you've got an 18-month-old in a different situation. It sounds like you're resettled and now you get a chance to do it, you know, in the same house, and you know,
new house.
Yeah.
New wife.
Yeah, yeah.
New businesses. Life is better now. I got my son. I got my daughter. I got my wife. We're all happy.
I love
it. There's no complaining, no fighting, no alcohol, no drinks. Like this, it's just, if I could show you what I look at every single day, and I get to wake up and look at this, and that's after I get to look at my beautiful wife next to me.
Good for you, man.
And then go look at my beautiful children. When you look at how I live and where I live, like, it's I'm living the dream.
How's the relationship between the two siblings being, you know, so far apart?
My son loves and adores his sister, and like, I mean, he hangs out with her. His favorite thing that he said just the other day, his favorite thing in life is when he hears her go, and my wife has assumed the role of mother, and he looks at her as a mother, and you know, it's just a beautiful family. I'm ready to have more kids.
Is that something you guys are talking about doing? You're not done?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we God damn it, I just felt the emotion. Unfortunately, we just had a miscarriage 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We were 15 weeks in. We already had his name. We were already like setting up, and the week before we were at the hospital. We seen him dancing, literally dancing, his heartbeat. And then we went the next week, and like, you know, when you go see the baby, doo-doom, 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 doo-doom. When we went all the way and they did the ultrasound, all you heard was shh. Oh, I'm like, where's his heartbeat? So, you know, we were a mess for a week. You know, what's funny is like, I've been through so much, which I mentioned earlier, throughout my life. I was more affected from this miscarriage. I didn't even know the dude. You know what I mean? Like, I was more affected by that. I mean, I was crying every day. I was getting mad at myself for being so affected and crying every day over it. I didn't understand where all this emotion was coming from. So that happened, and we went through that. And then that, with a combination of, you know, the pandemic and my son being balled up in this house for 6 months, me and him took a father-son road trip to Lake Tahoe a week ago. So we went there for like 4 days, went biking, hiking, four-wheeling. But we do a partners trip every year. So that was our partners trip this year.
That's awesome, man. I love that. I love the father-son trip. You know, we've kept you so long. Clinton Sparks, let's talk about the new album. It's called 93.
I have a new EP called 93. The reason I made that was, well, I wrote a book. So the book is called, you know, How to Win Big in the Music Business. Damon John from Shark Tank, he wrote the foreword. And I did this because back to what we were saying about, you know, kids in crisis and the youth being misguided, misinformed, and miseducated, and misled. I've always been someone that cared about people and wants to help. So I wanted to make a book. I mean, there's nothing, one of the biggest things in the world is everybody wants to be a rapper, singer, producer, DJ, right? Or, you know, a guitarist in a band. And, you know, there's nobody out there really teaching and helping guide people, not just the kind of logistical things you need to know, but like the principles and values and the psychology and the mentality and how to build an audience, how to network appropriately, you know, how to build relationships and how to market and brand effectively, all those types of things. And it's like, I just watch all these people just getting scammed and screwed over. So I wanted to create this book. And I made this book and a course with over 60 videos with the biggest experts in the music business that's in that course. It's winbiginmusic.com, winbiginmusic.com. You can get the book for free, the course, the products, all that. But in conjunction to doing this, the book and everything, one of the things I talk about is stop waiting for some magical moment that doesn't exist. And in that chapter, I talk about people that like think they got to make the right song and drop it at the right time and promote it the right way and this whole elaborate plan for it to be successful. And I see so many people, including myself, that have like hundreds of great new songs and they just fucking sit in their laptop or their computer because they didn't get the right feature or they didn't get the right video or they didn't get the right time or life happened. So it's like, you know, there's a whole chapter about talking about don't do that. Create dope, put it out. Create dope, put it out. Create dope, put it out. And one of the examples I talk about is like, you know, people like an analogy I use, like, I'm not going to pull out the rolls until I get invited to this billionaire party without thinking like maybe it's because you were driving around in that Rolls why you got the invitation in the first place.
Sure.
So, you know, I really elaborate on that. So because of that chapter, I had music like this 93 EP that was sitting in my laptop. So I needed to take my own advice. And I was like, you know what? I've got hundreds of songs. I got songs with Little John, with Pharrell, with Busta Rhymes. I got so many songs that are just sitting in my laptop. And then thousands of beats. And then, you know, songs that I've made that I'm proud of and I love, but I never put out because whether I'm like, I don't really want to be a performing artist or no one really cares or I'm busy doing this. And it's like, why would I do that? I could put this EP out. Maybe it's not a success overnight, but guess what? 3 years from now, some kid might find it and cover a song. Or 5 years from now, some movie music supervisor hears it and is like, this song is perfect for this movie. Now I'm getting publishing and royalty checks without even trying simply because I made my music available.
Right.
You know, actually creates opportunity, right?
Right. Yeah. It's like, and we live in a world now where people are stumbling and discovering new music all the time. I mean, the rappers and the artists that I know, even bands that are like almost having a rebirth now, who, you know, who would have thought Blink 182 would be cracking again?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, who would think like artists like, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, all of a sudden are awesome? You know what I mean? And it's like, we don't know what the future holds. Mars may say, you know what? We don't want anything that was a hit before. We want all shit that wasn't hits, and we're going to make it hits here.
Right.
Hey, we have a bunch of not hit music. You know, you don't know what the future has to hold. We've lived long enough to know that the life that we've lived in, the past 20 years has been so much faster in growth than the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like, watch how fast the next 10 years is going to be.
Yeah.
So I created this EP called 93. Well, I already created it, but it was sitting in my computer. And it was one of those things I'd always listen to and be like, man, this is so dope. I should put this out. Man, I don't know. Man, and I'm like, why don't I take my own advice? What the fuck am I waiting for?
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, and it's called 93 because the vibe is very 90s R&B. And I even got like Ricky Bell from New Edition BBD to be part of the song, who's also from Boston, as I am. So, you know, that vibe and that chord progression and the 90s R&B vibe has really started infiltrating pop culture and pop music now that I'm like, why am I not putting this out? I have a shit ton more music that's going to be coming out too, but this is the one I'm focused on. And everybody seems to be, I've gotten nothing but incredible feedback on it. And I've been working with video distribution, which I talk about in the book too, about how to get distribution, how to find the right distribution. What does distribution mean? You know, what do distribution deals look like? So, you know, video is one of the great distributors that I've stumbled upon and have done business with in the past, and I wanted to work with them again. So we put this EP out, and it's available now on Spotify, Apple, wherever you go.
I am super intrigued by the book, and I think there are a lot of people who listen to this show and listen to this station, because we will be on IW Radio Live, not live. We will be on IW Radio. And then this comes out as a podcast, obviously, but How to Win Big in the Music Business. I am intrigued by it. And I think what you said, you just make so much sense in the fact that it's just all about content. It's content, 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 content. And that's what I preach to kids all the time. It's just, well, we want to make an album. We want to go on tour. We want, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, what you need to do is create.
Yeah, I saw something that you posted the other day that I think kind of relates to this, and it really resonated with me. But you're talking about celebrating the small successes, and it's something personally that I'm not good at. Yeah. I'm horrible at, but I'm really good, I think, at celebrating for my son and his small successes. Right. But can you talk a little bit about the importance of that? I mean, I think people have that song in their laptop that they haven't put out, or it's the content that we're just putting out, whatever it is. I think you should be celebrating all these successes.
Yeah. Well, I call them little victories.
Little right? victories. Yeah.
And what I meant by that, and what I spoke about in that post on my Instagram at Clinton Sparks was, you know, people deflate and defeat themselves. And what I mean by that is they set these lofty goals that more often than not are kind of unattainable, especially for the amount of time that you've given yourself to achieve them. So let's just take a simple example. Let's say today you guys are like, all right, I'm going to get 3 full podcasts done, right? And that's your goal today. But, you know, you end up being on a phone call with other people. You're working, you're talking to some other artists. You send out 33 emails. You know, you got to take care of your kid because he's sick. You know, you make another contact, or somebody else DMs you about being a guest on your show, and you do all of these other things, but then you're like, fuck, I didn't get my podcast done. So you feel whack and you feel like you failed yourself today because you didn't get those things done. Never mind acknowledging the 42 other things that you did do where you can say, you know what, it's fine, I'll do that tomorrow because I was killer today and I did all these things, which, by the way, are going to help these other 3 things be better and actually help me make more podcasts because of all the connections and all the networking I was doing today that prevented me from getting those podcasts done. So it applies to even musicians, you know, and artists. You know, you're like, I want to get this, I want to get 1 million streams, or I want to get this many followers, I want to get my album done. And it's like, dude, maybe you didn't get all that done, but think about, you have to really write down all the other wins. Maybe you made 2 new connections. You know, maybe you got a radio interview that you didn't have planned before. You made a new person, you're on a new podcast. You did a collaboration with somebody else. You know, people build in their mind what they think it's supposed to be instead of like being flexible and understanding how to pivot when new opportunities come that could actually be better than the goal that you had set for yourself that day in the first place. But you're so stuck on that goal that you feel deflated and defeated at the end of the day because you didn't get it done. You feel bummed out. And that changes your whole mood. How you're going to treat your girl? Do you want to go to the gym now because you feel like shit? You know, maybe you eat because you feel like shit. You know what I mean? So, like, it really plays a whole role in your psychology and your whole well-being. So really acknowledging and celebrating little victories, it's like you should be doing that every single day because you have little victories.
Man, I can't think of any better way to end this, man. I got to tell you, this is one of my favorite interviews we've done, and we've been doing this for a long time. You are, man, there's a lot of shit going on in there, Mr. Sparks.
Hey, there's a lot of shit going on in here too, man. So
yeah,
whether you're an old timer in a band and you just jam, or you're still trying to make it,
yeah.
Or whether you've got kids, or whether you're somebody young, or whether you're a 22-year-old dad and you're still in the studio cutting verses. Like, this book is the quintessential number one modern day guide to helping you navigate your way to winning big. And it's not like, here's how you upload your music to Spotify. This is like, no, stop doing this whack shit and start doing this dope shit. And I'll show you how in this book.
How to win big in the music business.
Winbiginmusic.com, winbiginmusic.com, or the links in my bio at Clinton Sparks. Also, get my new EP, 93, and get familiar.
Yeah, and are you on social media? Where can they follow you for more of this insightful awesomeness?
Yeah, all social media is at Clinton Sparks.
Awesome.
At Clinton Sparks.
Clinton, thank you for just ignoring the earthquake and just staying with us through this. We had you for 20 minutes, and this is almost an entire episode. Thank you, man. This is awesome. Yeah. We would love to have you back on sometime.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, being a good father and realizing and recognizing great fathers like yourselves is really important to me. I'm not a fan of deadbeat dads at all. In fact, I have some pretty strong feelings against it. In fact, there's one point I wanted to start dads against deadbeat dads.
That's like pretty good. DADD.
Being a good father is, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, out of all the things you do, you know, all the titles you have and all the companies and all the things that you've done, what's your favorite title? Like, what's the greatest thing that you've ever done? And I always tell them my favorite title is dad. So I was really pumped to be on a show called Rockstar Dad Show.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely be coming back, because I'll be writing another book called Thanks Dad.
Awesome. Awesome. As soon as that's ready, please hit us up. Let's do this again. And we'll see you down the road, man. Thank you so much.
What kind of band are you guys? What kind of music?
So we're called Bowling for Soup. So whenever you said the Blink 182 thing, so we're in that world. We're sort of the other pioneers of pop punk. You know, we're.
Well, I was gonna say Bowling for Soup.
Yeah.
You mean the famous Bowling for Soup?
Yeah, that's us.
Oh my god! I thought when you guys were like, yeah, we're in a band.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like, you know, bunch of dads that just jam.
No. Yeah, we're that's the whole thing is that we're actually rock stars, and yeah, we're rock star dads. So
yeah, you really are. I know your music. I know who you are.
Yeah, that's us. So man, it's been a real pleasure. Go assess the situation. Shit, some shit may have fallen down around your house.
hopefully the only thing that's fallen down is men that have that were being bad fathers and watch this show and realize they should be fathers.
You know what, man? And I love that you gave some insight and some and that you told your story for real. There's a lot of guys that listen to this show that go through these things. And when we can get somebody on here and share their story and share that there is, you know, a way to get to that point where everybody can be happy and you know, you just gotta fight. You know, you gotta fight for your kids. And that's
one last piece of advice I'll give to guys out here, because look, it's tough for guys out here, man. The system's set up to not be favorable to men.
Yeah.
Right? And I will say, once you decide what kind of man you want to be and who you're going to be to your kids, there should be nothing and no one that can ever waver you from being the man you committed and decided to be for your kids. So there's nothing anyone can do. Like, no matter how mean my ex was, like, it wasn't going to change. I was never going to be like, you know, F your mom, I'm not that. Like, never, ever, ever.
Right.
Like, I decided I'm going to be a great man and I'm going to be a loving father and I'm going to care about you no matter what gets shot at me. You know, I'll take the bullets, but then I'll keep you protected from it. You're not going to feel the effects of it.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of guys like, you know, I'm trying to be a good father, but his friggin' mother. Man, stop, dude. It's not her. You.
Yeah.
You happen. You figure it out. You be a good dad. Sleep on the steps, on the stoop of his house in the rain to just say hi in the morning before he goes to school, if that's all you can get. That's what a man and that's what a father does. When you have a kid, you commit to being there. And those are the things you should be doing. Nobody should be in the way of you. I don't even care if you say the courts. Unless you're an asshole that beats up the mother and you're putting violence involved.
Sure.
I don't care man, if you see your son for 1 minute, fly across the country to give him a hug and go back home. Figure out how to get the money to buy that plane ticket.
Yep. Amen. Thank you so much, buddy. Good luck with everything. And we will for sure be promoting the book.
Thank you. Thank you for your music. Thank you for your contribution to the music business. And thank you for this podcast and having me on it.
You got it, man. Take care, buddy.
Okay, guys.
Later.
This is a song for my friends, Jared and Gary. They started a podcast and said a theme was necessary. They're just a couple of guys in a band that you know. Some rock star dads who started a show. Until the next episode.